Good afternoon. You are tuned to Juno Afternoon here for Tuesday, the 12th of January, the year 2016. Jeff Brown with you here today. Today we'll talk with Kate Pressing and Sally Hand about the 2016 Safe Graduation Party. Brenda Wright from the Audubon Society will be here to highlight this week's presentation about Birds and Beasts of Belize with Alan and Dodie. We'll talk with Alexander Brown about Thursday's Dress Up Your Pet fundraiser for the Gastineau Humane Society. And we'll get a preview of Wednesday's Mudroom's presentation. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout Music and More today on a Juno Afternoon. The forecast for tonight, rain showers, low temperatures around 36 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 38 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal citizens from the Ho-Chunk Nation are traveling to the Wisconsin State Capitol in Madison for a rally calling on lawmakers to protect effigy mounds. The Ho-Chunk Nation holds the prehistoric earthen mounds used for burial, ceremonial, and other purposes sacred. The tribe says any disturbance constitutes desecration. Tribal leaders are trying to stop legislation they say puts the mounds in harm's way by allowing excavation. Ho-Chunk Nation citizen Manda Mann is among those making her way to the rally. She's driving to the event with a group of family members, including her 10-year-old son. Mann says one of the lessons she's teaching him is respect, which includes respecting the mounds.
It goes back 10,000 years, you know, ice ages and everything that these mounds have survived. So that's what I want to teach my son, that he has to respect the creation. We have to respect it, because if we don't respect it, then God could take it away from us.
Mann's drive to Madison takes about an hour, while others are riding on buses, which are leaving from different tribal communities in the state and from St. Paul, Minnesota and Chicago, Illinois. Ho-Chunk Nation member Danielle DeLong is on one of the buses, which left Minnesota this morning for the more than five-hour trip. She says all the seats on the bus, which hold 56 people, are taken. DeLong is making the journey with her 13-year-old daughter.
It is very important to me to make sure that my children, our future, for the future generations, have these sites to be appreciated and to learn. These sites are sacred and they have so many more teachings that we don't even know all about yet. So if they're destroyed and desecrated, it would definitely erase a lot of our history. And there's already been so much damage done. So I think these things need to be protected.
The rally is being streamed online. Participants are also posting to social media with the hashtag #SaveTheMounds. As the youth suicide epidemic continues to plague the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, health organizations from off the reservation are offering help. Jim Kent reports on how the Center for Mind-Body Medicine is teaching people ways to cope with stress.
Like too many places on the reservation, the Pine Ridge School has lost students to suicide, five in the last year. In an effort to help the students at the school's dormitory and the adults who supervise them, Kathy Farah has been part of the team offering workshops on healing from trauma and dealing with stress.
I'm with the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, an organization whose mission is to teach professionals and other people skills that can help them self-regulate their body, to deal with the stress of things that are going on in their life, the stress of illness.
Dealing with stress comes by using a number of coping techniques taught by Kathy Farah and members of her group.
Guided imagery, using your imagination to promote health. It's also using things like meditation, which can be as simple as what we've been doing a lot here is just teaching simple deep breathing.
Farah says the hope is that learning to reduce stress and deal with trauma will help reduce the number of suicides among Lakota youth. But there's also enormous stress on school staff in dealing with at-risk students seen as potentially suicidal. Kathy Farah and other members of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine plan to return to Pine Ridge on a monthly basis, if possible, to assist those staff members in coping with their own stress as they work together to teach Lakota youth how to overcome their depression and believe in themselves. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau, KRNN FM in Juneau. In the studio with me now is Kate Pressing here from the Parents for a Safe Graduation Committee to talk about the 2016 Safe Graduation Party. Kate, thank you for coming down the station today.
Thanks, Jeff.
So you've got experience in this. You had a child graduate last year and this year.
I do. So, yep, I had one of my sons graduated last year, and I got involved last year, and now I'm involved again this year with another son that is graduating.
What's the process like?
This whole event is kind of parent run and community run, and so it's a big process. It gets started at, actually, some of the meetings have started. I think they started in October or November, with just starting to get some of the committees together with how to plan this great big party. And maybe I should take a step back and tell you what the party is. It's an event that is for high school seniors, all graduating high school seniors, that'll occur in May. And you might think that this sounds early to get things started talking about it, but this is the planning stages for us, and this is where we need to get parents and communities and the community members involved right now. But it's an event to keep our high school graduating seniors safe on this great big night for them. And it's a really fun event for them that they all want to go to. And we have it at Centennial Hall. And once they're in, they come in and they stay in for the night, and they can't leave and come back. And so helping to ensure that these kids are safe on that evening.
But how many graduating seniors will there be?
I believe there's about 400 graduating seniors throughout the community. And so that's the really nice thing about this event, is that it's for all graduating seniors. So it can be kids from Thunder Mountain High School, Juno Douglas, the homeschool programs, Yakus. So all of those different programs, all of those different students are invited to this.
Must be an awesome time.
It you know, because I did participate in it last year, I mean, I have to say that it was a really awesome time, and the kids had a great time.
Is there a theme this year?
I think they're still working on it, but I think it's a kind of a beach-oriented theme.
It's good for this time of year.
Right.
So it's happening May 29th at Centennial Hall.
Yep, it's happening May 29th, Centennial Hall. On that day, all of the seniors will be going through their graduation ceremonies at different times during the day, and this is the culminating party afterwards.
What kind of help do you need from the community?
Well, we need help in a lot of different ways. So we have, from the community, the committees are in the process right now of, and they'll probably go out in the next week to 2 weeks. Letters will go out to community businesses asking for donations for this party, because it takes a really large amount to get this party going. We have to do rentals of the halls, rentals of equipment, we do food. We do prizes, a lot of different prizes to keep kids interested in being there, all of those different kinds of things. And so we do seek donations from the community, and those letters will be going out. We also seek donations from parents. We're looking for people to volunteer their time. So the volunteer of time can be prior to the party, getting everything kind of organized at this time of year. As far as that, there's a lot of coordination effort that goes on at this time of year. And then there's the actual setup of the party, and then there's the people that are actually working at the party. So it's a huge endeavor with a lot of parent volunteers and a lot of community volunteers.
How many volunteers would you say it runs at? About 100 or 200?
I would say in the 100 range is probably. But, you know, there's kind of background volunteers and things like that, too. Like, for example, last year, one of the local pizzerias was donating pizzas and making pizzas all night long, you know, and then somebody run over and get them and bring them in, you know, so that there was constant hot pizza all night long.
You know how to do it because you've done it before.
Well, I wouldn't say I know all aspects of it. We had, it was really a great group of people in the past, and I know this year, again, there's a great committee that started, but we're encouraging more people to come. In fact, they have meetings typically every 2 weeks to every month, and they rotate them between their locations if it's in town or in the valley. And our next meeting is going to be for volunteers, for parent volunteers, more specifically, is January 26th. And that's going to be at JDHS, and it's at 5 o'clock in room 115. And you can find that on our website, too. So we have our own website. And on that website, which you can just Google it, Juno Safe Grad, but it's actually junosafegrad.weebly.com. I don't know if anybody's writing that down. But if you Google it, you'll find it. There's a lot of information. One of the neat things about our website, this is something that we did last year, is we put a link to PayPal on it, and you can donate right from the website. So in the past, you always had to write checks and get them mailed in. We've made it a lot simpler. We've also got links on there to be able to volunteer. So you can click on that link, and you can choose what you want to be involved in for volunteering and what time of night, for example, even at the event. We have different slots, like from, 9 to 11, 11 to 1, and then maybe it's 9 to midnight, midnight to 2, and then cleanup times afterwards. Because the whole party ends at 2:16 in the evening for 2016, the class of 2016.
Got it. All right. Keith, thank you. Your message for the businesses out there is to not think twice when you get that letter in the mail.
Right. Not think twice when you get that letter in the mail. Please donate. Go online to donate if you'd like to do it that way. If you have more questions, you can email us, and that's at junosafegrad@gmail.com. So all of it is real simple to find us.
Kate Pressing, thank you very much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I think that's it. Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 12th of January, 2016. It's the birthday of the novelist Jack London, San Francisco, 1876. Went to school through the 8th grade, then went to work, manual labor, worked in a cannery. He was an oysterman. He was a crew member aboard a seal hunting expedition to the Bering Sea. And he got along well out at sea. Jack London said, "My method was deliberate and simple. In the first place, I resolved to do my work no matter how hard or dangerous it might be, so well that no man would be called upon to do it for me." He said, "It was my pride that I was taken in as an equal, in spirit as well as in fact. From then on, everything was beautiful." Off the coast of Japan, the ship hit a typhoon. Sailors took turns at the wheel because it was so physically exhausting. London was called for his turn, the ship rocking wildly, wind and rain he could barely see, waves crashing over the stern. He said, "At the end of the hour, sweating and played out, I was relieved, but I had done it. I had done my trick at the wheel and guided 100 tons of wood and iron through a few million tons of wind and waves." He came back to San Francisco and saw that there was a writing contest sponsored by the newspaper, the San Francisco Call, and he wrote about the typhoon. He wrote a piece called "Story of a Typhoon Off the Coast of Japan," and it won first prize, and that was the beginning of his career as a writer. He went off to the Klondike for the gold rush, did not find gold, but he got material for his first book, The Call of the Wild, a novel about a sled dog in the Yukon, and was an enormous success. He was only 27 years old. It's the birthday of John Winthrop, born Suffolk, England, 1588, the Puritan governor of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, famous for his City on the Hill sermon, in which he said that the Puritans who came to the New World had a special covenant with God to create a new holy community. He also said, though, that the rich had a holy duty to look after the poor. It's the birthday of Edmund Burke, Dublin, 1729, went into the House of Commons. He was a great orator, famous reformer, opposed the tyranny of the monarchy supporting the cause of the American colonists, a man of great eloquence who nonetheless did not seem able to persuade others to his point of view. And it's the birthday of the writer Haruki Murakami, born in Kyoto, Japan, 1949, criticized by some Japanese for being too westernized, grew up reading Vonnegut, Fitzgerald, Capote, Raymond Carver. His latest novel, Colorless Tsukuru Tozaki, and His Years of Pilgrimage, came out in 2014 and sold 1 million copies in a month. Here's a poem for today by David Ignato, for my daughter, in reply to a question. We're not going to die. We'll find a way. We'll breathe deeply and eat carefully. We'll think always on life. There'll be no fading for you or for me. We'll be the first, and we'll not laugh at ourselves ever. And your children will be my grandchildren. Nothing will have changed except by addition. There'll never be another as you, and never another as I. No one ever will confuse you, nor confuse me with another. We will not be forgotten and passed over and buried under the births and deaths to come. A poem by David Ignato, for my daughter, in reply to a question, from his collection Against the Evidence, published by Wesleyan University Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by LegalZoom, resources to help protect intellectual property, including trademark, copyrights, patents, and independent attorney consultations. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
On September 1st, more Alaskans became eligible for Medicaid. If you were denied in the past, reapply. If you're between the ages of 19 and 64, single and make less than $21,000, or a married couple making less than $28,000, you might be eligible. You can apply online at healthcare.gov, on MyAlaska with Aries, or with a paper application. The fastest way is on healthcare.gov. Free local assistance is available to everyone by calling Search Outreach at 966-8883.
It's about 18 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to the Juneau Afternoon. Next guest in the studio, Brenda Wright from the Audubon Society, and Alan and Ann Doty, who've been to police and back, and here to talk about it this Thursday night at 7 o'clock at the UAS Rec Center. Alan, Ann, and Brenda, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
So the presentation is at 7 o'clock at the University of Alaska Southeast Rec Center.
That's correct.
That's good.
It's free and open to all of the people in the public.
Alan and Ann, you went to Belize, which is in Central America. But beyond that, could you describe what it took to get you there and why you went there?
We were attracted to Belize for three reasons, in particular: the birding, the fishing, and some of the cultural aspects, particularly Mayan culture.
Where in Belize did you go?
In our three trips to Belize now, we've been to all of the districts except the very northeast district. So we've been to Belize district, which is where the largest city, Belize City, is, and also down the Caribbean coast to the southernmost. So we've had a good look at most of the country, if not all.
Could you describe Belize for me, please?
Belize is smaller than New Hampshire, and in fact smaller than
Denali
National Park. Population is a little over 300,000, which makes it the least populated and least densely populated country in the Americas. So quite a different scene than you would imagine just saying Central America.
Was it full of different species of animals and birds?
There are about 590 species of birds that have been seen in Belize, plus a good number of mammals, including many of the big cats of Central America. So it's very interesting from that standpoint as well.
What do you do to get ready to go on a birding expedition so far away?
Well, as far as the transportation logistics are concerned, we work with a specialist travel agency, an agency that specializes in fishing and ecotourism. But beyond that, we typically get the travel guides for the country, a bird guide for the country, and try to do some of our homework.
What do you have to bring? A pair of binoculars or two pairs, I guess?
Binoculars, camera, spotting scope, and the books that go along with it.
And how many species did you actually see?
We've recorded now about more than 250 species of those birds, of those 590 in Belize, so about almost half of the birds of Belize.
What kind of advice would you give to people who are thinking about doing similar things?
Try to get around the country. Try to sample more than just one area. We've spent time in eco-lodges and in fishing lodges, but we've also rented a car and gone to some of the more modest accommodations in the country. We have felt safe in the country. It's an English-speaking country. Those would be some of my advice.
It's famous for its snorkeling. Did you do any snorkeling?
No, we haven't done any snorkeling, although in one of the fishing lodges, we have contact with folks who do snorkel the famous blue hole on Terneff, outside of Terneff Flats.
Thursday at 7 p.m. at the University of Alaska Southeast Rec Center is where the event is. What are you going to be describing and talking about?
We're mostly going to be showing our photographs, which are heavy on the birds and animals, but also cover many of the Mayan sites.
What was your experiences, Anne?
I found it's an easy country to get around because they speak English. So if you get in a cab and ask them to take you somewhere, they understand where they're going to take you. To me, that's a wonderful thing. So, and the people are very proud of their country and eager to share.
All right, thanks for coming down. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, but they're really an interesting duo. Alan knows all the birds, and Ann takes all the photos. So I think you might really enjoy it. There's some excellent photos this Thursday at the Rec Center at UAS.
And it's free.
And some of the pictures are taken with our smartphone and a scope. So you can see digiscoping.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Jeff.
A bit more than a penny whistle.
Is it?
It was played. Do you remember Vladimir Putin was standing there, wasn't he? And he was.
Shall I give you a clue?
Did he his career or something? Or
no.
Egypt. Yeah, Tim's right. Let's have a listen to, if we can possibly bear it, to a bit more of that. Fantastic. There we go. Indeed, the Egyptian military band playing the Russian national anthem. Razi and Tim, some music for you. Go on.
The hiccuping boy.
This is a boy who hiccups.
Thank you.
27 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTUO and KRNN FM in Juneau. Our next guest is Alex Brown here to talk about a Dress Up Your Pet Day fundraiser for guests in the Humane Society. It's happening this week, and thank you for coming by, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
When is it exactly?
So on, it's actually National Dress Up Your Pet Day. It's a real calendar event day. And so basically what we've done is we've teamed up with the Gastineau Humane Society, and we've also teamed up with Flynn Photography and We Fishy to kind of bring a whole celebration sort of thing happening at Alaskan Dames. And so what is happening is Flynn Photography is going to be there. She's going to have a little photo booth. She's going to take professional pictures of your, you know, your pets, and We Fishy will be there with costumes as well as treats to make sure your pets are happy while they're getting their picture taken, all while if you want your pet's picture taken, it's just a $3 donation to the Gastineau Humane Society. You can also actually purchase either a disc or Dropbox file of more photos if you know, if you really, really, really love your pet. So,
is it a formal event?
Well, I mean, I guess it could be. I mean, I'm sure there will be some bow ties. I've seen tuxedo shirts in the past. I'm trying to think of what else there was. Oh, it is going to be a contest as well. So whoever has their pet kind of dressed up the snazziest, or maybe if they do have a tuxedo on, they could win our pet photo contest, which we'll be doing on Facebook.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
How did the idea come about?
Well, we were looking up fun ideas for things to do in January. This is usually kind of everybody's recouping from the holidays, and January's, you know, pretty slow. Other than people getting to the gym, it's kind of a slow time of year for everyone. And so we were looking into special holidays and days of the year, and National Dress Up Your Pet Day was there. And so, you know, we're a dog-friendly store at Alaskan Dames, as well as at our sister boutique, Lillette. We usually have pets around. So we thought we'd go ahead and celebrate and let people bring their pets in and spend some time and, you know, get their picture taken.
And there will be sweaters and things like that available for dogs.
Yes. So We Fishy will be there. They will have a whole selection of clothing, either for purchase or to borrow. You know, if you really love the sweater that you pick out for your dog, I'm sure they will definitely sell it to you. And then, like I said, they'll also have treats as well. So, and I did talk with Callie from Flynn Photography. We had kind of thrown out the idea that of taking pictures of treats being thrown to the dogs, you know, to get that kind of like that funny kind of glazed expression they get, or when they finally catch it in their mouth. So that was one idea we threw around, but we'll see. I mean, it'll probably be a different set for every pet. So cats are also welcome, I guess, if they're the kind of cat that can handle being brought around, you know, in public. I know not all cats are ready to kind of venture out of the house, but yeah, all pets are welcome. If you have a snake or a lizard, I mean, it's Dress Up Your Pet Day, not Dress Up Your Dog. So yeah, any pets are welcome. I mean, I don't know if you could dress up like a fish or anything like that, but I mean, I'm sure you could throw something on like a duck or a chicken or something like that.
And this is happening this week.
Yeah, so this is actually happening this Thursday, so January 14th, and it's from 3 to 6. And again, this is taking place at Alaskan Dames.
I wonder what the secret is for getting dogs to smile.
Yeah, you know, that's a good, I've seen a couple of dogs that just kind of have that natural sort of grin happening whenever they open their mouth, but I know my dog, she's a little poodle. She doesn't really smile very often. She's got that disgruntled look all the time, but I'm sure she's happy.
And $3 is a donation to the Gastineau Humane Society.
Exactly, with the possibility to purchase more photos later. So if you really want, if you want to get, you know, a nice printout of your dog, we can get you the higher quality images from Flynn Photography.
All right, Alex, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so. I think that would be it, other than just mentioning that we are going to be doing a Facebook photo contest. So make sure that you know, like us on Facebook. That way you get to see all of these awesome pictures that will be being, you know, taken, and then you can vote for which one is your favorite. So it's really up to our Facebook followers to decide which pet, you know, had the best outfit.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Class. Well, that was just a lie. Yeah, they said you was high class.
34 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juno Afternoon here, listener supported KTO and KRNN in the capital city. In our studio, Suing and Amanda Compton here to talk about tomorrow night's Mudrooms presentation.
Whoa! Surprise!
Happy 2016.
Yeah.
So for people who do not know, can you describe what Mudrooms is, please?
Absolutely. I'm going to turn this one over to Steve. And also in the studio, we have Steve's son, Neith.
Yeah, Mudrooms is a storytelling event. We've got 9 events in the season number 5. This is our 5th event of this season number 5. And it's 7 speakers that do a 7-minute story based on a topic. This month's topic is second chances. And we really try to choose topics that have kind of a general theme in nature that people can approach them from a number of different ways. But the 7 speakers give 7 stories, each 7 minutes long in duration. And believe it or not, the charge for this event is $7, and that money is directly passed through to nonprofits in our community.
How do you find your tellers?
Right now, we've been pretty fortunate that Mudrooms has got somewhat of a following. So a lot of times after an event, people will approach us and say, hey, we're interested in telling a story. The storyboard that consists of 7 people also goes out and tries to get people, sign people up for telling stories through our website, mudrooms.org. The list of our themes for the year are listed there, and you can contact us through our email there, and sometimes through our Facebook page as well.
So recruitment plus volunteering, and that's not just people volunteering and saying, I want to do this, but people volunteering their wives, husbands, teachers, things like that. And then they get us to kind of help them. But we had someone come through Facebook today. Yeah, if you guys know Melissa Griffiths, we're trying to recruit her for February. A theme for that is romantic entanglements. We only have a couple spots left, so we'd like people to sign up. So, yeah, like Steve said, we have a theme. And people tell a story on a theme. They get 7 minutes, and then they're cut off. It makes it just long enough to really get a piece of that person. And it's just short enough that you kind of want more, but you know enough of them that if you see them around, you might be inclined to say, hey, I heard you. It was really fun.
Steve, you told before, what kind of preparation did you have to do?
Well, your timing's perfect, Jeff. I'm actually telling a story tomorrow night for Second Chances, and this will be the second time that I've told a story at Mudrooms.
Woohoo!
Almost 2 years to the date. And I think, you know, the thing about Mudrooms is that we do like people to prepare and at least put something down on paper and have some, you know, not come at this without any preparation. But I'm going to tell a story that's very personal to me, and it's a story that I've lived with for the last 20 years. And so in some ways it's going to be fairly easy to tell the story, but it's quite an emotional story for me. And so I'm trying to go through the motions of practicing the story, so hopefully I won't get as emotional as I think I will on stage. But I think that that's the real power of Mudrooms, is that a lot of our storytellers, they've never told a story before, but a topic has definitely touched them in a certain way, and they come to Mudrooms prepared to sell something that's really personal, and a lot of times you can see them reliving those stories actually on stage in front of you. And so I think that that's one of the really powerful things about Mudrooms.
I agree. Well said. I don't want to say anything else.
Who's telling the stories this week?
Our 7 speakers for tomorrow are Jennifer Mannix, Miguel Rohrbacher. I should note, this is the last Rohrbacher. Like, this is our, the full family has gone up. This is our first family in town where everyone will have spoken if Miguel shows up tomorrow and speaks. We have Heather Ridgway, Steve with me now, Steve Suing, a woman named Caro, and I didn't get her last name. Someone named Elisanga Milligrock. Do you know who that is? Did I say that right?
The volunteer here at the station.
Yes, he is. Yeah, I think he's going to have an interesting story, too. And John Smith. And we'll have music by Julie Copens.
And is it a donation?
It's a donation. We've suggested $7. If you like who we're donating to, which changes twice a year, give more. If you don't have cash on you, we still invite you to just come in.
What organization is benefiting this go-around?
This is our 5th event of the season. It's our extra event, so we divide our profits evenly. 4 months go to one particular nonprofit, and 4 months go to another, and then we have this ninth event. And this is our extra event where we just donate to one particular cause. We are donating to the food bank.
You've, in your numerous seasons, gone through a lot of different volunteers. What has changed over the past few seasons when you first did it at Rockwell?
You're right, at the Rookery. That was super grassroots. Not that we're not anymore. We're not a nonprofit. We just organize on email and talking to each other. I would say there's a nice division of labor now. Every one of our board members brings a really solid skill set, and the event, while not turnkey, everyone knows where they fit in, and the communication is efficient, and things happen with, I'm knocking on wood, without hitches now. So I would say, go ahead.
I would agree with that. Just to kind of continue that, I think that Mudrooms has gotten a notoriety because of KTO and spots like this on Juno Afternoon, and also airing our stories, the stories on air. I've met quite a few people in the community that have never attended one of our events, but they don't miss it whenever it broadcasts on the radio. So I think that we've really got the word out there that, yes, this is an event that happens at a certain place on a certain time, but there's other ways to access this, and I've really put that out there that's captured a lot of people that really enjoy storytelling, but maybe can't make it out at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday or Tuesday evening. So,
what kind of changes have you seen in the tellers themselves?
None. I like that. I think I feel proud to say none. I feel like I wanted to start this with a mission of simply having people from the community be able to get up and speak. And like what Steve said, is it's organic in the sense that a lot of these people have never been on stage and done something like this. Like, this is not necessarily storytelling in its art form as much as it is someone willing to get up on stage and express or be vulnerable. And I think the audience really... I know the audience recognizes that and appreciates that, and that's why we keep having people come up that are such a breadth of backgrounds in terms of their experience. And so that has not changed. We have had – I've done some recruitment at the Glory Hall. We've had people who are from just every walk of life and political background go up there. So that hasn't changed. We've had – such a nice breadth of people. And now, certainly we have some events that are all funny stories, some that are really tough, like difficult stories. And there are trends in particular events. But I would say as a whole, it's always a mixed bag. And that's what's remained constant.
I'm not going to ask you what are your favorite tellers or what are your favorite stories, but what has been the favorite mood that has been elicited from your stories?
That's a really hard question. I would have to think about that for a little bit.
I don't think I have a favorite. I think recently the one that's been the most powerful to me is in October we did Hauntings, and it was a pretty dark show. I think when we picked the topic, we kind of thought, some silly ghost stories. But by and large, the seven stories were pretty dark in nature. But I felt like it was a really powerful show, and that a lot of people were revisiting places that they'd been in the past that were very uncomfortable for them. And it definitely gave the audience something to connect with, but also something to get for the audience to think about. And that's the beauty of Mudrooms, is that I don't think very few of the listeners, I think, show up to a Mudrooms, listen to the seven stories, and don't find some kind of connection or something that really hits home to them.
And I think I like the stories, too, the kind of stories. It doesn't seem like people go up there with something to prove. Like, I'm up here telling you a story so you know what a great athlete I am or how cool I am because I'm a doctor and I've traveled the world. There generally is some pretty genuine take-home message, and I think that's appreciated a lot.
Go ahead.
I think what's also appreciated from the storyteller's point of view is that, you know, we're on the outside a lot during these events, taking care of kind of the nuts and bolts. But in today's world, it's, you know, very often we have conversations with friends and family, and they've got their phone in their hand, and they're doing some kind of project. But if you come to these events, the house is pretty full, and you don't see one smartphone screen on. Like, everyone comes in the door and is really has the buy-in that they're going to listen to the storyteller and they're going to commit 100% of their energies to the event. And I think that that's really powerful. Whether or not you ever get up on the stage, being an audience member and watching that, and everyone's so intent and focused on what is being said on stage, I think is often rare in our lives these days.
Yes. I don't think I've actually noted that, but now that you said it, that is kind of a nice, rare opportunity to not have a bunch of people on their phones.
I noticed you call them speakers rather than storytellers.
I do. I just think there's this connotation with storytelling events that is campfire or s'mores that I try and avoid imparting on people. Because people aren't necessarily seasoned storytellers. They're not storytellers. They're getting up there. They're telling a story that night, but they are speaking from their heart.
Well, since we're talking about mudrooms now, let's talk. This is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at Northern Light Church.
It is. We like people to get there early. It fills up. There's a bottleneck, and we start promptly at 7 o'clock. So Northern Light United Church, 6:30 to 7. We've got cookies donated by the Rookery. We've got coffee donated by Copa. And $7 gets you in the door. There is great seating. We encourage people to move to the front because we've been at capacity, kind of standing room only, but there's always room to sit down in the front. So if you slip in after we start, just make your way. It's casual. Just make your way to the front.
And the theme is second chances.
The theme is second chances, and I think there's going to be some really fun stories. I know there's going to be maybe one about a wish for romantic second chance and other things like that.
And the speakers, again, are?
Let's go through the speakers one more time. We've got Jennifer Mannix, Miguel Rohrbacher, Heather Ridgway, Steve Suing, Caro Ling, maybe? Elisanga Milligrock, and John Smith, music by Julie Copins.
Steve Suing and Amanda Compton, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I actually do. Tomorrow night's going to be, I think, kind of a milestone for Mudrooms in that, you know, all this money that's been passed through to the nonprofits over the course of Mudrooms, tomorrow we're going to probably hit the pinnacle of over $50,000 that's been passed through to nonprofits here in Juneau. So definitely a nod to Amanda's leadership in bringing this idea to Juneau. All the speakers that have come and told stories at Mudrooms and all the audiences that have attended over the last 4.5 years, thank you. And we'll continue to bring stories to the stage here in Juneau.
So come help support the food bank, and thanks for having us, Steph.
This is Bird Note. Sparrows kick. Robins pick. Backyard birds with different highly evolved strategies for finding food. Watch a song sparrow as it forages on the leaf-covered ground. With feet held firmly side by side, it hops forward. Just as it lands, it quickly scratches backwards, overturning leaves or soil. It often does this twice in rapid succession, in a behavior so distinctive of sparrows that it has a special name. The double scratch. With eyes and beak trained on the ground, the sparrow is ready to snatch up any newly exposed insects or grubs or seeds. A robin forages nearby, also atop the leaf litter. It's clearly not in on the sparrow's game, though. It doesn't double scratch or even single scratch. Instead, it methodically picks up or brushes aside leaf after leaf with its bill, in search of prey. Quite a few kinds of sparrows double scratch, so it seems to be a mark of specialists in ground feeding, often amid dense cover. Robins sometimes forage in the leaf litter, but they also seek out open, grassy areas to pluck up worms or fly up into trees in search of fruit. So, thanks to evolutionary variation, the sparrows kick, robins pick.
What we most often hear is bad news about our teens. That alters what we know is true. Most Alaska teenagers are doing positive things. They're volunteers, role models, and much more. Spirit of Youth tells these stories.
I've always wanted to work with animals, and reindeer seems like a cool thing to work with.
They've been doing plane loads and bringing them in.
That's Liliana Cosbrook and Jake Carlson, two Aleutian Region teenagers who spent the summer learning all about reindeer and reindeer herding. This summer, the native village of Port Hyden had 29 reindeer flown in to kick off a new community food security project. A mentor from another village taught locals all about herding and caring for the animals. Jake and Liliana were chosen to be his apprentices. The two teenagers say they learned as much as they could. Here's Jake.
Every day, 8 hours, besides weekends. You just have to always be kind of close to them, always talking so that they can get used to your voice and just interact with them as much as you can, you know. Try to get close, and you have to walk slow and all that. You have to be really patient to be a reindeer herder.
This is Liliana.
My family is quite proud that I wanted to work with these reindeer. I can say that I've worked with reindeer. It just seems like a cool thing.
Jake and Liliana are back in school now, so their official apprenticeship has ended, but they say they'll continue to help with the reindeer. The native village of Port Hyden says it has plans to get more animals in the future. With help from Hannah Colton in Dillingham, I'm Shanna Sheehy.
You know of a teenager making a difference where you live? Take some time right now to nominate them for Spirit of Youth. Get more information at spiritofyouth.org.
Listen again to this story and other positive news about teens at spiritofyouth.org.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
Thank you.
Water, motherhood, time, health food. What do these things have in common? They all have a history in America.
And it's this kind of history that we bring you each week on Backstory. I'm Peter Onuf.
I'm Ed Ayers.
And I'm Brian Bello. Join us each week as we explore the surprising twists and turns in the story of how we got from there to here. Saturday afternoons at 3 on KTOO News, Juneau.
Tomorrow in June afternoon, we'll get an update on Eagle Crest activities with Lindsay Halvick and Jeffrey Clow. Talking with Kathy Stepien about eating disorders and how families can help access treatment in Juneau. We'll continue the bike adventure series with Eric Olson talking about his ride through the Alps of France. We'll talk with Blake Ryder about the upcoming day of service. At Ryder's Almanac for Note News, come over tomorrow on a June afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, rain showers are coming scattered later on. Forecast for Wednesday, cloudy skies with scattered rain showers.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Yeah, we just came out of the Blue Mosque and suddenly it just went off like that and sounded like two blasts, really.
A suicide attack in Istanbul, Turkey kills 10 people, most of them German tourists.
It's Tuesday, January 12th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Kelly McEvert.
And I'm Ari Shapiro. A report from Istanbul coming up and reaction from Germany.
Chancellor Merkel says terrorists are attacking our free societies.
We'll preview tonight's State of the Union address.
And ambulance services are really pricey, so how about a computer to help deploy resources?
I call this HAL. I don't know if you ever saw that sci-fi movie. That's how smart they are. He's just very smart.
And the best thing for a bad back is exercise.
The more that you use it, the more likely you are to keep it strong, fit, and healthy.
Those stories are coming up in this half hour after this news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. As President Obama prepares to deliver his final State of the Union address, he is expected to note some accomplishments of his administration. That includes the nuclear deal with Iran. However, that accomplishment may be complicated somewhat by word today. Iran has detained 10 U.S. sailors who appear to have strayed into Iranian waters. More from NPR's national security editor, Phil Ewing.
He wants to tout what he considers the success of the Iran nuclear negotiations this year. Iran agreed to give up fissile material and other facilities for making a nuclear weapon in exchange for sanctions relief from the United States and other powers around the world. But even as the president gets set to give that speech, now we have these Iranians capturing a group of U.S. Navy sailors, changing the discussion in Washington, changing the discussion around the world, changing the TV headlines for a lot of people around the world.
NPR's Phil Ewing, a defense official, says the sailors will be released tomorrow morning. They're said to be healthy and unharmed. Allies are expressing solidarity with Turkey after a suicide bomber attacked a historic district of Istanbul today and killed at least 10 people. Terry Schultz has that story.
NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg says the alliance stands with its member Turkey, and he says the 28 are united in fighting terrorism. EU leaders have also joined in with condemnation and condolences for the country that's in line to become a member of that organization. European Commission spokeswoman Maya Kuciancic.
The EU and Turkey stand united against all forms of terrorism. We must step up our efforts.
Most of those killed and injured are believed to be German, with at least one Norwegian also among the victims. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is getting the endorsement of the liberal grassroots organization Move On. As NPR's Tamara Keith reports, it comes as new polls show the presidential race tightening.
New polls show Sanders with a lead over former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in both Iowa and New Hampshire. Clinton has announced endorsements in recent days, including from Planned Parenthood and the Brady campaign to end gun violence. The move-on endorsement of Sanders is not surprising, but is significant. Members of the grassroots group voted on their choice, and Sanders won overwhelmingly. Move-on says it has tens of thousands of members in the first two voting states who will actively campaign for Sanders. The group's executive director says this endorsement is a natural progression from its earlier Run Warren Run campaign, an effort to draft Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren to enter the race. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Des Moines.
The Senate has blocked a measure calling for tougher audits of the interest rate-setting Federal Reserve, the measure part of an effort by, among others, GOP presidential candidate Rand Paul into giving lawmakers greater oversight over the central bank. The 53-44 vote fell short of the margin needed to overcome a Democratic filibuster. Financial markets were jittery today, but managed to eke out gains. The Dow was up 117 points. The Nasdaq rose 47 points today. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Universal Pictures with Hail Caesar, the Coen Brothers comedy starring Josh Brolin, George Clooney, Alden Ehrenreich, Ralph Fiennes, Jonah Hill, Scarlett Johansson, Frances McDormand, Tilda Swinton, and Channing Tatum, in theaters February 5th.
Good afternoon. You're listening to All Things Considered on KTOO. I'm Dominique Johnson with this local news update. The Juneau Assembly appointed Barb Scheinberg this morning to the vacant District 1 seat. She's the owner of Scheinberg Associates, a community and strategic planning consulting business. Scheinberg was on the Planning Commission for 5 years and serves on the city's Board of Equalization. Assemblymember Jesse Keel said the other three applicants also had strong experience.
Barbara just really, for me, shone through as someone who, you know, has done a lot with our economic development plan, has been very active in our housing issues, who has experience both working for government and running a business, who is very collaborative and really well versed in the community.
The District 1 seat belonged to the former Deputy Mayor Mary Becker, who assumed Mayor Greg Fisk's position when he died in November. Juneau voters will elect a new mayor on March 15th, and Becker will return to her District 1 seat. Scheinberg says she would consider running again.
I think this idea of a two-month time period is a great opportunity that I'm privileged to have to see how much work it really is, how does it fit with everything else that's going on, and just get a chance to see what it would be like.
Scheinberg said the city attorney is looking into one of her early business commitments as a subcontractor on the airport master plan. Her first responsibility will be helping the assembly select a new city manager. And tonight's forecast calls for rain showers becoming scattered late, lows around 33 to 37 degrees, northeast winds increasing to 10 to 20 miles per hour. For tomorrow, cloudy skies, scattered rain showers, highs around 35 to 40 degrees, northeast winds around 10 to 20 miles per hour. You're listening to All Things Considered on KTOO, online at ktoo.org.
Support comes from Valley Medical Care, offering family health care in Juneau since 1982. Valley Medical Care, a proud sponsor of Public Radio in Juneau. Information at 586-2434.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Kelly McEvers in Culver City, California.
And I'm Ari Shapiro in Washington. A deadly terror attack in Istanbul today. Officials say at least 10 people, 8 of them Germans, were killed when a suicide bomber blew himself up in the heart of Istanbul's tourist district. He was apparently Syrian and said to be linked to ISIS. In a moment, we'll hear about Germany's reaction to the attack. First, NPR's Peter Kenyon was on the scene shortly after the blast and has this report.
Istanbul's Blue Mosque has been high on the city's list of must-see sites for years. But today it was a scene of terrible bloodshed as a suicide bomber detonated his device amid a tour group outside the mosque. The blast could be heard for miles. Erdal Karatas is a 28-year-old waiter at the Pasha Sultanahmet restaurant, up the hill from a main square where the blast took place. Even hundreds of yards away, he was finding shrapnel.
I heard one bomb, actually. Yeah, I first scared. I thought maybe some electric machine or something else. But I see bomb, of course. I see some pieces over there.
At least 200 yards from this, from the square, and it came this far.
Yeah, I think it's far, but it's too strong, maybe.
Police quickly cordoned off the scene and closed nearby monuments for fear that there might be a secondary attack planned. As helicopters circled overhead, British photographer Johnny Green contemplated the close call he and two friends had just had. On a one-day layover in Istanbul, they decided to visit the Blue Mosque with a friend who lives in the city. And just as they stepped back outside, the explosion echoed through the square.
Yeah, we just came out of the Blue Mosque and just walked, and suddenly it just went off like that. And yeah, it was almost sounded like two blasts, really. The friend we met, who lives here, she lived in Istanbul for 7 years, and she was petrified. So as soon as that happened, she just wanted to run as far away in the opposite direction. I was caught between my usual thing, is to run towards the action.
Unlike previous attacks, a suicide bombing in Ankara left more than 100 dead in October, Turkish authorities were quick to point a finger of blame in this case, and it pointed at ISIS.
Ve Suriye kökenli bir canlı bomba saldırısı olduğu.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced that the bomber was a member of ISIS and had crossed over from Syria. Erdogan then went on to defend Turkey's controversial anti-terrorism tactics. Germany says 8 of its citizens were killed in the blast, and Peru says 1 Peruvian was killed. Turkey's Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu phoned German Chancellor Angela Merkel to offer condolences over the large proportion of German victims. Davutoğlu says the blast will not alter Turkey's...